Food and Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. And Michter's is the first American whiskey to be selected as Whiskey of the Year by Whiskey Exchange. Michter's, it's all about the whiskey. Welcome to In the Drink, the show where we talk to some of the most interesting people working in the beverage industry. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, wine director and owner of Fausto Restaurant in Brooklyn, where we actually tape this podcast in our wine cellar. I also make a little bit of wine in Italy under the name Annona. This week, Cristiano Garella joins us in the wine cellar. Cristiano produces some of Northern Piedmont's most exciting wines as a winemaker. And as a consultant, he single-handedly helped improve the overall quality of the wine in his area. We had a great chat about the Alto Piemonte, and let's get into it. I'm really happy to welcome Cristiano here for a new episode of In the Drink. Welcome.
Thank you, Joe. It's my pleasure.
And it's really my pleasure as well. We love serving your wines here at Fausto, and you've had such a big impact on so many of the wineries in your region. I would love it if you can tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in wine.
I started some years ago. It was like 1996, just starting when I was 12, starting tasting wines as almost a joke. So I had my first in Italy when I was between 12 and 13 years old. And so I met a lot of producers there. I met a lot of Barolo producer Lang in general. And I started trying to enter in one world. So I tried to visit some producers and so on. Then it was natural to need the production, need the possibility to vinify something, to ferment something, and in general to make alcohol. So this was the first idea, and it was between 1998 and 2003. In that period, I worked with an old man in Masserano, so in Bramatera area. He was between 88 and 93 years old, and he introduced me to the real production, so pruning, cutting grass, and everything, fermentation. Obviously, it was a super rustic style and old method. No water allowed during all the work. So if you cut the grass during summer, you could only drink wine, red wine. And so it was just an interesting period. At that time, obviously, was studying at before the college, so I was just at the school. And during the afternoon, I used to just work in the vineyard and drink super tannic red wines, fresh during summer, spring, and so. Then I started studying at the university enology, winemaking in Alba. And in the meanwhile, obviously, was just a visiting producer through Piedmont, Tuscany, France, and some other places, just trying to understand and learning and tasting. Before my graduation at university in 2006, Cell Estates called me. And so in October 2006, I started at Cell. And so it was natural to be involved in one world professionally. So obviously Cella was important for me, and I was there between 06 and 2013. In the meanwhile, I started also working a little bit on the Etna area because it was interesting for me to try to understand a different volcanic soil. And in the meanwhile, in 2010, we started with Giacomo Colombera and his father, Carlo Colombera, Colombera Garella, and with Dieter Euskel and Peter Dipoli, Le Pianelle in Brusnengo. So was just the beginning of something. And when I left Cella, it was natural to start to try to help some of the small winemaker in vine grower in the area to try to help them to vinify or make wine.
And did you come from a winemaking or wine-loving family? How is it that a 12-year-old got interested in wine?
We were not a winemaking family. In my area, nobody was, at least, a winemaking family.
What because, area was that?
Yeah, because Northern Piedmont was super sleeping. Mm-hmm. When I was young, between 1996 and 2000, so nobody was taking care of vineyard or wine. Nobody was speaking about wine in the area. Everything was super depressed. And so my mother was a secretary and my father a gymnastic teacher, so not exactly a wine family. The only connection was through my grandmother, was a good drinker, but not real taster. So this was the only connection. So I don't know exactly why I started, but anyway, I found a press brought by Veronelli in a wine shop, and then I started trying to enter in one world.
But your area was at one time an important wine growing area.
Yeah.
And what had happened?
Yeah, it was super important. It was one of the most important Italian wine area for sure, as dimension and as quality of the wines. This was between the second half of 19th century and the first decade of 20th century, when through the second industrial revolution, a lot of workers moved away from the vineyard to have a rise salary every month in the textile industry's factories. And then in the meanwhile, we had obviously Peronospora, Phylloxera, and every single disease coming in that period, and a big storm between 1904 and 1905. So a good number of workers moved away from the vineyard and started to work just as workers in the industries. During the period between 1848 and 1880, you had in Lesona, who is obviously a small village in northern Piedmont, you had 22 or 24 professional wineries labeling wines. And then after the big crisis, nobody was working, almost nobody was working in Lesona. So we left only Sella with another small wine grower. So for like 8 years, nobody was longer producing wine in Lesona.
And in 18, there were more than in Barolo in Lesona.
But was also before the first real vintage of Barolo is considered the 1904. So it was just strange to find a place in the middle of nowhere. And I could say this for Lesona, but I could say the same for Gattinara, where you could find labeled wines. In Italy, almost nowhere, you could find super old vintages of labeled wines. So this was for sure a testimonial of how much was important and how was the area in that period. But then with all the obviously also the World War and everything changed, and we lost a couple of generation or three generation of vine growers. So now the challenge is being able to produce wine and trying to understand where we should go, where we have to plant new vineyard and so on.
You lost the knowledge that comes with multiple generations and old vines as well, I imagine. Is it possible to find some very old vines there?
You could find some old vines in the middle of the trees, but you cannot use. So we lost 96% of the total amount of vineyards. So we passed through 150,000 acres to almost 6,000 acres. And this was in less than 100 years. And then obviously we lost all the knowledge and the roots of everything.
So when you started with Tenuta Sella in 2006, you said?
Yeah.
How many professional wineries were there at that time?
In Lesona, we had Sella as the only real one, but Sperino was starting in the period or just started, and Clerico was starting again producing wine. So these were the three producers.
And Sperino is Paolo De Marchi from Tuscany.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Sperino and Luca and Paolo De Marchi, yeah.
Paolo's son, Luca.
Exactly.
And so there was just three at that time.
At that time, we were three, but two were not ready yet for bottling or labeling. So we had only just one real producer for a while. And now we are 12 or 13 small producers in Lesona.
Wow.
So in only, anyway, 12 years. So we need a couple of centuries for be back, but we will work.
It seems that there's so much potential. I mean, even if you got back to a quarter of the production that it was at one time, it would be huge.
Yeah. The most difficult thing is really find the best places where you should plant vineyard or not. And this is, you should try and vinify, but this takes a super long time because for cut the trees, taking the rights, putting the plants, then starting the production and then age of the production and then taste the wine, we will spend some years. So we should learn, and as it is in some other wine areas, we need to know where could be the best spots or not.
So when you left Tenuta Cellens and started with your partner, Colombera and Grella,
yeah,
you also at that time started consulting. Is that correct?
Yeah, I had a few experiences before because working in Vedna with Biondi was between 2008 and 2012.
Biondi from Sicily?
Biondi, sì, from Tre Castagni. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our good friend, and we worked together some years, and it was interesting for me to understand a different terroir, different soil, having the sea, 5 minutes, so not so bad. So different compared to Alto Piemonte, for sure. And so in that period, I started consulting a bit, and 2010, we started with Colombera, 1,000 bottle first vintage, and Le Pianelle, 2010 as well, 1,300 bottles first vintage.
And so, what was the first wine that you made for each of them?
Allora, the first wine for Colombera was a Bramaterra 2010, 1,100 bottles or something like that. Because we had the possibility through Carlo vinify a small part of the total production. And then the second, for Le Pianelle, the first wine was a rosé, like 800 liters of rosé, Nebbiolo rosé, and 1,300 bottles of Bramaterra 2010 as well.
And why did you split up the two separate brands, especially when it was such a small number?
I think every single person, every single vine grower has a different soul. And for trying to understand and for learn a little bit faster, I need to vinify separate spots as far as I can, because it's important. Every single person considered differently the vineyard, the vine growing, and everything. And the philosophy of the winery is different. So for me, it's important to keep this separate. And another important thing for me, for each winery I work with as a consultant, that every single winery must have their own vineyard, their own facilities, their own label. And so they should be right, honest, and not commercial.
That makes sense. And do you have a personal style, or when you work with a winery and you consult with them, other than them having their own means of production, are there other criteria? Do you tell them they have to farm in a certain way? Or I know in a lot of your wines, you stay away from a lot of new oak or extraction. Like, how do you work with them stylistically?
I think is a natural path. So there are some rules in the group of work. In general, we are organic-based group of work. Not all the wineries are certified organic. Some of them are certified, some are no, some other are trying to be certified. In general, you should be very light. And so the idea is keeping the soul of the winery, but obviously I cannot accept a lot of things. So I love to work almost only with natural local varieties like Vespolina, Cratina, Nebbiolo, obviously. And then it's easy. If the vineyards are good enough and the people are able to work with their own vineyards, your path is almost done. You should only vinify what you have and try to express. So obviously I love to work with natural fermentation, but I don't like Brett. I don't like IVA. So the idea is keeping the cleanness of the wines and being able to bring them in a different to a different level, maybe. For example, over oakiness is obviously a problem because it's the same of Brett, but in a different way. You will taste of Brett or IVA and you will not taste the terroir. So the idea is just this, taking care of the terroir in the vineyards and taking care of the vineyard and the grapes during the vinification. So it's very easy.
Can you tell us all of the different wineries that you work with at this point?
Allora, I'm partner of Le Pianelle in Colombera Garella. When I work outside Piedmont now, only in one single organic winery, is historic estate of Freccia Rossa in Lombardy. Then in Alto Piemonte, I work with Joppa and Canova in Gaeme area, Boniperti in Fara area. Then I work with a number of small wine growers in Bramaterra area, for example, Zambolin, Andrea Montiperini, Gaggiano, Bellini, Baltera. Then I work with a small winery in Erbaluce di Caluso called Pastoris. Then I work with another small in Costa della Sesia called Cascina Preziosa. And then I try to help some other small guys.
And you have a local wine distributor as well, right?
Yeah.
Telling me about some international wines as well as Italian wines. How do you manage it all? It seems like
this is a problem.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the final problem. Finally, what I'm doing really is tasting, yes, a lot, and then going through the vineyard and the wineries, driving a lot, and a lot of phone calls. It's just this. It's hard because working with a lot of different people, obviously every single person have a different needs, has a different needs. And so at this time it's maybe harder, and I hope to find some guys helping me in the future. But obviously the wineries now are small. We have no big money like in other wine areas. So it's important to keep everything in balance at this time, I think. So it's the reason, for example, why I travel a lot through US, working a bit of a market also, because we could split the cost through the different wineries. And it's important at the beginning of a new wine area or old wine area, you should take care of the cost as well.
And how many of those producers are in Lessona?
Allora, Lessona, I have Colombere Garella as a 1 hectare, but we are buying something more. Le Pianelle just bought a good parcel in Lessona. Gaggiano has a small vineyard in Lessona. Zambolin has a small vineyard in Lessona. And I'm no longer working at La Prevostura, but at the moment, so four wineries. Four.
So maybe a quarter of the wineries in Lessona.
Yeah, in the future, maybe more, but it's fun because it's very different places.
Can you tell us more about Alto Piemonte geographically, and then some of the different wine growing areas that you work with in Alto Piemonte? What makes them unique?
Yeah, Alto Piemonte is a small wine area. So we are between two different system of moraine hills. So what we consider Alto Piemonte is between almost Malpensa Airport, moraine hill of Gaeme, Fara, Sizzano, and the moraine hill of Erbaluce di Caluso. In that small area, you could find a number of small or super small or unexisting appellations. Historically, the system was almost based only on single municipalities appellations, because the Cluny monks during the 12th century helped a lot the vine growers to prune and start a different kind of viticulture. So we used to have like 40 different small appellations. Now we have 9 appellations in Alto Piemonte, and some of them are just a single municipality appellations. Normally, I try to explain a little bit better Alto Piemonte through the two banks of the Sesia River. So the east bank, where we could find the Bocca, Gemme, Sizzano, and Fara is one of the side, and the west bank is Gattinara, Bramaterra, Lessone, and Costa della Sesia area. So in another possibility, as explaining, are the different geological soils that you could find in Alto Piemonte. For example, we have 3 volcanic appellations, Bocca, Gattinara, and Bramaterra. So 2 on the west side and 1 on the east side. Then we have a couple of marine sand spots, like this one is Lessona, obviously. Another one is Montalciata and Castellengo area, so in Costa della Sesia. And then we have the morainic appellations of Gemme, Fara, Sizzano. Then in Gemme, Fara, Sizzano, you could find obviously different mix between volcanic rocks and morainic rocks. But in general, this is what we consider Alto Piemonte. We are 100 kilometers in north of Barolo area. We work in a cooler climate. So we are in the foothills of Alpine mountains, and we have much more rain than in Barolo area. But rain is almost only during April and May. So we have, in general, a longer season, a longer phenological season, and cooler temperature. So the biggest differences between Alto Piemonte and Lange are the origin of the soils. So our soils are almost only sandy, based on volcanic, morainic, or sea sandy, but anyway, sandy. And then we have only acidic pH soils. So in Lange, you find obviously basic pH with marne and clay. In Alto Piemonte, you find only acidic pH soils between 4.4, 4.3, 4.6. So are super acidic as a pH.
And how does the acidic pH soil affect the wine? Does it make more acidic wines?
It's not so easy, the connection. So it's true that the three minerals in the soils are different in a clay soil or acidic soil. And so we could say easily that we could have a bigger amount of free iron, free potassium, free manganese, and some of them, of these minerals, passed through the vines. And so they impact, in a way, the acidity. So what we are saying, what I try to say is, we are in a cooler climate, so we expect to have high acidity. Okay, that's fine. In general, our acidity are between 15 and 20% higher than in Barolo and Barbaresco area. But having a bigger amount of potassium in the wine, we have an higher pH than in general expectation. So you could find high acidity and high pH. And this is a sort of strange balance of almost all the Alto Piemonte wines. And so.
It's really interesting. And who are the new producers that have come around? Is it more investment from other parts of Italy, like with Paolo De Marchi and Luca? Is it local producers who are replanting? What's the general profile of these people?
Yeah, I think some of them are guys coming from abroad or other different area from Italy, like Luca De Marchi or Christoph Kunzi coming from Switzerland, or Dieter Euskel coming from Germany. Or anyway, Roberto Conterno coming from Lange.
That was a big...
Yeah, it was.
When he bought Nervi, yeah.
It was a big change. And I think everything is changing in Alto Piemonte. And so it's important for us if we are more producer, having good wine. So I have no problem at all. Honestly, I'm happy. Having new wine growers, serious wine growers, are much more than welcome. Some other new wineries are built from local guys who changed their work coming from the crisis from textile industry. And so we are back now after two generations producing wines. And some other are maybe local architects or professionals in general who are seeing a possibility in Alto Piemonte to build small wineries or small agriturismo or something. So the area is really in a new renaissance. Now we are like 90 different producers. So is a good amount for a small area. And we need to be consistent and serious. So we need to produce good wine.
Would you say organic viticulture is widespread or mostly just the wineries that you work with?
No, I think obviously in general is a path. They need to learn before how to make good wines and how to keep or almost something as a normal production. And then is a path. And I think a good number of small wine growers are going into that direction. So I'm sure that in Bocca, for example, in the future, everything or almost every single good wine grower will go through that same way.
And I like what you said about the fact that it's a cooler climate, and I think that translates, I think, to generally lower alcohol wines, right? You can have your Bramaterra, I believe our last vintage was 12.5% alcohol.
Yeah, it is the ideal alcohol percentage.
I think so too. I mean, I think that's also how more people want to drink. I'd love to drink a lot of wine, yeah. But if you have a lot of wine at 14.5%, you're not going to feel so good.
We are lucky for that. I think obviously we must be very careful about the production and the vineyard and everything. So it's always a question of balance. And you could produce 15 alcohol wines in Alto Piemonte as well. But everything is still a problem of what you want to do, where you want to go, and so. So in general, I prefer to stay between 1250 and 1350.
If someone were to produce a higher alcohol wine, is that just from a later hang time or choosing a warmer site?
Yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. Is it fair to say you intentionally try to find cooler climate or more balanced sites where it would naturally produce a wine that is 13 and a half or lower?
From my side, it's super important. I almost never had one very good or one wine of my life higher than 1350. So I want to stay in that range, ideally. Then I could be wrong sometime and I could have another 2017 vintage like everybody. But if I could choose, I will stay there.
You know, I found some really great wines at like 14.5 and I'm smelling it and really like enjoy the first glass and then I can't finish a bottle at that point. And it just gets, even if I can appreciate the nose and, you know, a lot of things about the wine, I always find that I don't want to finish the entire thing. And so I'd much rather drink, you know, a whole bottle of wine. Yeah.
No, we are lucky for that. Because obviously during the 70s, this was a problem because our wines were super high in acidity without malolactic and the total alcohol was between 11 and 1150. So maybe not enough. And now we are having good period, obviously having a little bit warmer season and being able to vinify and taking care better of the vineyard, it's easier, I think.
That makes sense. And can you tell us about the local grapes that you use? And what they all add. I know a lot of wines in the area are blends also.
Yeah. Obviously, it's hard to work with Nebbiolo and some other grapes. So everybody loves Nebbiolo and it's easy and is an easier expression of the different spots. Then Vespolina is one of my favorite varietals. We have only 3-4, so it's not difficult. And Vespolina is very interesting. Vespolina is not far, genetically speaking, from Nebbiolo. But it's completely different in vine growing and wine making, obviously. She produces a lot of small bunches, so and very, very spread out. And the berries are elliptic. And normally, it's interesting to say when the skins are ready for the harvest, the seeds are still green. And you cannot weigh because she suffers of dryness. So normally we pick the Vespolina with a little bit of green seeds, and this is one of the reasons why Vespolina is so rich in Rotondone molecules, so white pepper at the nose. So
do you have to be very careful when pressing Vespolina? Would it have bitter?
Yeah, Laura, this is actually interesting because she has a smaller amount of polyphenols compared to Nebbiolo. But you could find Vespolina 2 days of maceration with skins and then just pressing and so. And some other super long macerated, like what I prefer to do, 28 days, 30 days with Ioppa, Boniperti and all the Vespolina. I prefer to have a very long maceration than the polymerization of the tannins of the skins with the tannins of the seeds. So in that case, every day is softer your wine. So from my side, Vespolina is very interesting. It's a high acidity and this kind of green, some green elegant notes like green tea leaves, raspberries and white pepper. So Vespolina from my side is interesting. Croatina is another varietal, and you could find Croatina almost only in Alto Piemonte and in Oltre Po Pavese. I like Croatina as a little bit less than Vespolina, and is a little bit more rustic. The quality of the tannins is lower. She has more fruitiness, and she has more dark plum notes. It's interesting because it's a reductive grape varietal, so she expresses a little bit better the saltiness, the minerality, and the bloodiness of the place where we are. Then Uva Rara. We have a tiny bit of Uva Rara, but normally I don't use for the serious wine. So
I remember you saying a few years ago at a tasting that you don't really like Uva Rara.
No. Uva Rara is good for for brunch time, for breakfast, for a slice of salami and cheese, but not for aging wine. So is an okay varietal, but it's not my varietal.
How does Nebbiolo differ from, in let's say, the Langhe?
Allora, actually, the clones are almost the same. So if you find the 70s and 80s vineyard, you find only Michele Lampia, almost. In the new vineyards, we are planting a lot of Picutener and Chiavennasca, so for small bunches. And now there are some experiments for trying to have again some Spanas. But anyway, we have almost no longer Spanas available for new vineyards. So the bunches are the same, but obviously the balance of the vines is completely different. We have a lot of more leaves and many new branches. So our vineyards are more green compared to Lang, and we have obviously much more grass. And having no clay, we are lucky from one side, because in 2 hours after a big rain, you could enter in the vineyard. But it's also important to have sand in the soil, so you could drain and being in a balance with water and everything.
I found that Alto Piemonte Nebbiolo is maybe finer tannins than in the Lange.
But I think it's a question of soil. So having sand, you have less tannins, less clay, and so the central part of the mouth is different. Because we have the structure of the tannins is different. We cannot have the tannins, the quantity of the tannins and fruitiness as it is in Barolo and Barbaresco. We have, I could not say thinner tannins, but for sure less tannins and different aromatic base and more acidity. Yeah, this is clear.
Which are the Alto Piemonte wines that you think are the most age-worthy? You can age the longest.
Allora, it's a good question, because obviously it's everyday thinking for me is how we are impacting the aging, because I still have in mind 1860s bottles, 1840s bottles. So when you produce wine, there's a lot of different possibilities. No, you could have a rich drinking wine for a couple of years good, and then so when you produce wines from good wine areas, the nose must be approachable since the beginning, and the wine must be good since the beginning, because we are new wineries. But it should age well for at least 20, 30 years. So I'm sure that Lessona, Bramaterra, Gattinara, and Gamme and Bock are all good for long aging. So it's hard for me. At the moment, we have not enough experience. But a good wine from Alto Piemonte, if it is well made, it should stay as it is for at least 25 years.
What do you think the future of Alto Piemonte is?
I think we will have some new wine growers. More good wines, I hope. And so will be easier the expression and the explaining about Alto Piemonte. If the number of wine growers will rise up a bit, everything will be easier for us. So what I hope is this. So more knowledge in the wine world for Alto Piemonte, and more knowledge in the wine growers from Alto Piemonte about the winemaking and everything. So this could be a direction. Obviously, we will lose some of the wineries on the road, because everything is moving, and for sure some new Barolo producer will come, no doubt, and they will purchase some wineries, and will be fine, because I'm sure they will be able to produce wine.
So, what are your biggest challenges right now in Alto Piemonte?
Is as it was at the beginning is bringing back the Alto Piemonte in the good places. So bring it back like a serious wine area, not like a cherry or unknown secret. So this is the dream or something like that.
To not only make the good wines, but have people around the world recognize the hard work.
Yeah, and making better wines, obviously, because will be easier. And every year it's easier because we are understanding something.
Would you say that knowledge right now is the biggest thing holding everyone back from making better wines? Just it's a young region. It's an old and young
exactly.
region.
And so we need to know the best spot. We need to know how vinify and how is the impact of the wood.
What's the oldest Alto Piemonte wine you've ever tasted?
At the moment is 1848 Lessona from Sella, and then 1850 from Sperino. And then I still have some very old, I have a number of old bottles, but 18 something, there are not many anyway.
Wow. I mean, are they Are they enjoyable, or is it, what's the experience like tasting wine from?
So obviously, it depends a lot by the cork. So some of them are just gone. Some and few are just obviously white because the polyphenols are gone completely, so are white or almost light rosé. But what it's interesting is the base of the nose is still tasty, a little bit as Nebbiolo, and the tartaric acidity is for sure recognizable like a Nebbiolo, as a Nebbiolo. So the expression obviously is not like our wines now, but you could recognize the saltiness, the iron, the bloodiness. So,
well, I know someone in 2180 on their rocket ship is going to be tasting some Colbert and Garella.
Exactly.
And yep, saying this was the heyday when Alto Piemonte started coming back and making its great wines once again. Thank you so much for being on In the Drink.
No, thank you. Thank
you. It's been such a pleasure.
I hope it will be enjoyable in 2080. So.
That's it for our show today. Thanks so much for listening to In the Drink. Again, I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. You can follow me on Instagram at Joe Campanelli for updates on the show, photos of what I'm drinking, and the occasional rescue dog pic. You can also email me at info@inthedrinkpod.com. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review on Apple Podcasts. In the Drink is produced by Jessamine Molly. Huge thank you. And also a big thanks to Alyssa Satter for her help with the promo for the show. Also want to give a special thanks to Renny Lopez for our theme music. And last, but by no means least, thank you so much for listening. Join us next week for another episode of In the Drink.